Okay, so what I thought we would do is we're not gonna do all this. I think we'll just do one part only because of time. The shiur I gave over in my Tuesday Chashmashir. But it's a theme that I always like picking up, which is where as I always like to say, the story of the Megillah was written in a manner that's eight. Yeah. All right. Anyway, so one of the questions that comes up is you always have these strange chazals, these strange gemaras that try to add to the story of the Megillah, which is always strange because Megillah, the story is so simple to understand. Why would the sages have to step in and add another layer? This isn't like we have like an inconsistent timeline in the Torah, or let's say you can't take a certain verse literally because if you did, it would imply some sort of distortion of the halakhic system. Here, there's really, almost on the surface, it seems like there's no need for Chazal to ever get involved and comment or fill in gaps of information, yet they choose to do it. So let's take up the last section. One of the themes I think that Chazal do is what's called filling in the gap of human limitation. Okay, meaning, one of the great concerns of the Megillah that we face is that the Megillah does not contain the name of God. That's something you hear from like second grade on. What makes the Megillah different? The name of God's not in there. So then what people do is they work out all sorts of way to say that, well, it's because of the improbability of how events played out, right? That's how you know God was behind it, right? But we know that sounds nice, but at the same time, improbability is a very subjective idea. You know, it's true that a lot of interesting coincidences and quotes took place, but it's not enough of a person could read the Megillah and never see a God's hand involved in it. Chazal don't pick up on the improbability. That's not what they focus on. If you look at the end, here's a good example of a different type of explanation of divine providence. All right, so you have to remember the scene at the end of the Megillah. If you look at source number 9, so just to read through the Pesukim quickly, so Achashverosh, Esther makes the accusation, and what does Achashverosh say? Vayomer Melech Achashverosh, Vayomer Esther Malkah, Mihu Zeve Ezehu, Asher Meloolibo Lasos Kain. So Achashverosh wants to know, who's this person? Who's the person that is threatening, Esther and her people? Vatomer Esther, Ishtar V'yev Haman Arazeh. Okay, so let's go slow now. So she accuses Haman. And then what happens to Haman? Vaman Nevas with them Melech Malkah. So we can only appreciate, again, if this were a movie, Haman was obviously distraught at this point because now he's being accused by Esther of trying to kill her and her people. So he's in a very difficult position.
He doesn't know that it's her people. Yet.
Anyway, so what happens? So it says now here's what's very interesting. The Hamelech kamba chamoso mishteayan al ginasa bisan. So what does the king do? All right, he leaves, which is very bizarre. Why would Achashverosh leave the scene? In other words, you would think that if it comes out that his wife is accusing his advisor of trying to kill her, so he should have been decisive at that very moment. And yet, what does he do? He leaves. Okay, he escapes. And then, where does he escape to? His garden. And then, as we all know from the Medrash, and this is if you look at source 10, it's where it fills in. What happens when he goes outside to the garden? Well, who said what? No, before that, what does he see in the garden? Right, they're chopping down his trees, right? Very George Washington. But they're chopping down his trees, right? Who's chopping down the trees? Haman's gardeners. Like, they were wearing their Haman gardener uniforms, I guess. And of course, the Gemara says it was these malachim. Like, the malachim were dressed up like Haman's gardeners. And so Achashverosh yells out, on whose order was there to chop down my trees? And what's the answer? Haman, okay? Now he goes back inside. So now, Kinaret, what happens now? It says, Bahaman nofel. Why was Haman falling before Esther? No, before, I'm saying, why was he falling down? He's begging for his life. But then the Gemara says that, Chazal say that an angel pushed him. So what's the idea? What does it mean the Malach has to step in now and push Haman? Of course, Haman was begging for his life. And then what does Achashverosh say? Achashverosh says, he says, Hagam lichbosh es hamalkami mevayis, right? Then he says, you know, you're trying to, what do you call it, take my wife right in my house, right? Then Haman goes pale. And even at that point, Achashverosh still isn't decisive. What happens? Harvona, who's what I call a cameo guy. It's like from a sitcom. It's somebody who makes like one appearance like per season. Harvona, who we know nothing about, steps up and says, oh, guess what? The tree that, where's Darius? The gallows. Yeah, the gallows that were set up for the stake. The stake that was set up for Mordechai is out there, right? And what happens? The order's given and Haman's hung. So the question, yeah. So I think the point here is if you get into this, the psychology of what's taking place, there's a certain theme that the Megillah always likes going over, at least Chazal bring up in the Megillah over and over again, which is where, if you read this story, it's very easy to conclude that that the success of the plan was due to Mordechai and Esther's plot, meaning they came up with this brilliant plan, right, and everything worked out perfectly, right? Or every step of the process worked out perfectly. But in truth, if you look in the Pesukim, what is Megillah trying to tell you? Even with Esther's plan worked out so perfectly, okay, she had no clue what would happen after she made the accusation to Haman. See, there's only so far you can manipulate another person, okay? She took Ahasuerus all the way to the river, right? But she couldn't quite get him on his own to cross over. She couldn't do that, okay? She had to. At a certain point, she recognized she did as much as she could, and now you got to imagine the drama in that room. Now, I imagine, I can speculate about this, but I imagine that Esther's probable conclusion after she made the accusation was, what should Ahasuerus have done? Right, and he didn't. So my bet is that Esther was probably very, very nervous at that point. She was almost panicking because she's thinking to herself, I didn't expect him to leave. I expected him to go ahead and arrest Haman. Now he leaves the scene, okay? Why does Ahasuerus leave the scene? Yeah. So we know one thing about Ahasuerus' personality from the beginning of the Megillah. He's the kind of person, he's very anti-Trump, okay? President Trump makes his own decisions. He limits his consultation with his cabinet. Ahasuerus is the exact opposite. Chazal say that Memuchan, who's Haman, right, is the one who steps up and gives the king advice. It's not just that he's looking for advice. There are personality types that are looking for people to tell them what to do. Ahasuerus was that personality type. So now think about the problem Ahasuerus has. Here he has, on the one hand, he has his wife, who's making his accusation. On the other hand, he has his most trusted advisor. The very system he relies on to make decisions, okay, is now being accused of trying to kill his wife. So for someone like Ahasuerus' personality, when you deal with this kind of conflict, I was asking a psychologist when I gave this over, who was attending the shiur, I said, if this is true, she said, yeah, this is a common reaction. When a person has faced this tremendous conflict where with these personality types, what's the natural reaction for a person to do? What do they want to do?
Escape.
So he leaves because he wants to escape. He can't handle the conflict. Who's he supposed to turn to now? He has no idea what to do, and there's no one there to tell him what to do. He's trapped. So he goes outside. So this is where the Chazal step in. They're stepping in. Who cares what happened in the actual garden? The fact is that what did Ahasuerus need? What couldn't Esther do? What? He needed a nudge. Ahasuerus needed some type of nudge to get him to go back inside and now go along with what Esther's intention was. It couldn't have been Esther on her own. There was something, whatever happened out in that garden, the point is there was something beyond Esther's foresight that led to Ahasuerus now coming back in, okay? But it's very interesting. The other idea, the Malach pushing Haman down, I don't think it means that, I mean, what was Haman actually doing? Begging for his life. But what was Ahasuerus looking for? What was he really looking for? What? More than that, what? Right, an excuse, right? He needed the excuse. He needed some type of excuse to now say, now I feel justified in allowing Haman to be killed. But he needed something. So I think when you read the Megillah, of course Haman wasn't trying to take advantage of Esther, but Ahasuerus was looking for something to pin onto Haman, more so, right, than what Esther's accusation was. Again, he was caught between two different worlds. But now that one little piece of circumstantial evidence that, again, he's distorting, that he's reading as Haman trying to, take advantage of Esther, that's enough for him to go ahead and now feel comfortable about the next step. But even then, he still couldn't do what? He still couldn't make the decision. You got, again, put yourself down in Esther's mindset. She's probably thinking to herself, why can't this guy go ahead and make a decision? You know, like, it's pretty clear now that Haman's guilty, all right? You have your rationale, and you see Ahasuerus still couldn't do it. He needed to, what had to be restored to him was that sense of security from advisors. So that's where Charvona steps up. So Chazal say about Charvona, he's a consummate politician. He's the kind of person that always knows when to ride the wave, okay? So originally Charvona was one of the advisors who went along with Haman, okay? But then when he sees Haman's plan going down, right, he steps up and says, well, this is a good opportunity for me now to become Ahasuerus' chief advisor. No, it's Chazal. It's an Agata, you know? But they always try to tell us personality types. And you know that kind of personality. There's certain political types who they're always ready to follow the political winds. Wherever they go, hold on, they're the person that takes advantage of the opportunity. But Ahasuerus needed that. Ahasuerus needed that person to turn to tell him, finally, this is what you need to do. Okay? So that in a nutshell, I think that's the point that Megillah is bringing out here. which is, again, to show us, number one, the limitation that a person has in their plans. As much as Esther's plan was ingenious, it shouldn't be that we look for the improbable and then point to God. I mean, you could say that, but I think there's another idea that Chazal points to, which is a person has to recognize, and you guys, who, especially guys who appreciate physics, you know that when it comes to knowing the amount of information outside of your Dal Amos is very limited, right? Like you guys, when you plan for like college and stuff. So everyone thinks they have this clear plan in life. It's going to lead A to B to C to D. But there's so many factors beyond your control that you're just unaware of. And your lack of knowledge is the reason why those outcomes don't happen. Esther, she had a brilliant plan. And the average person reading the story would conclude it was all her. But there's always that one step. And to me, that one step was after she makes the accusation, right? At that point, things out of her control had to take over. God, Ahasuerus's conflicted personality, Haman's ego, this guy Chavona stepping in. Esther could never, ever have known what was going to take place after that one moment. So even though the Megillah doesn't record Esther's panic, my sense is that there must have been that bead of sweat going down her back as she's thinking to herself, this is not exactly going how I thought it was going to go. I expected Ahasuerus at that moment to arrest Haman, and he didn't. She had no clue how it was going to end up. So that's what Chazal brings to the Megillah story. They're always trying to bring just like another layer just to understand. Do you need it to understand the story? No. But it does add that element to kind of round out what exactly is taking place in the Megillah. So...